Welcome to Scarlet Tavern. Grab a drink, take a seat, and let's begin. Tonight, we delve into the chaotic fallout the Zodiac left behind. A trail of fear, unanswered questions, and red herrings galore. Though the killing stopped, the obsession didn't. Detectives, journalists, and armchair investigators have been chasing a shadow for decades, refusing to let this ghost fade. We'll explore the missteps, the breakthroughs, and the theories that just won't quit. Is the truth buried in the evidence? Did we ever get close? Or is the Zodiac still out there, grinning behind a mask of mystery? Stay sharp. We're not done hunting yet. This is Scarlet Tavern. All right. Part 3 of the Zodiac Killer.
Onward we go down the rabbit hole.
And the second to last episode. This is, well, the last episode before our season finale. So, I guess let's just jump right into it. There, with this, again, because of the way I have sectioned this, we're going to get some repeat stuff that we've already talked about, but it plays into the way that all of this is going. So, bear with us if it is stuff we've talked about before, but a lot of it is recurring themes that keep popping up. So, by the early 1970s, the Zodiac Killer's reign of terror seemed to be coming to an end. His final confirmed murder, that of Paul Stein, occurred on October 1969, while his letters continued sporadically until 1974. They grew less coherent and more sporadic. But while the Zodiac may have disappeared from the public eye, the investigation into his crimes never truly ended. Detectives, journalists, and amateur sleuths alike refused to let the trail go cold. In this episode, we'll delve into the years after the Zodiac's last confirmed attack, the investigation's cold trail, the difficulties law enforcement faced in pursuing him, and how advances in forensic science and modern investigative techniques have brought us closer than ever to uncovering the identity of this elusive killer. This is the story of the Zodiac's aftermath, a tale of persistence, frustration, and the enduring quest for justice. By 1971, the Zodiac investigation was at a standstill. Despite a flurry of activity following each new letter and murder, there was no solid leads, no conclusive evidence, and no prime subjects or suspects who could be definitively linked to all the crimes. The killer's ability to vanish without a trace and evade capture baffled investigators. Every time they thought they were closing in, the Zodiac managed to slip through their fingers. The lack of communication and coordination between law enforcement agencies made the situation even worse. The Zodiac's murders and letters crossed multiple jurisdictions, Vallejo, Napa, and San Francisco, each with its own police department, set of priorities, and protocols. While the California Department of Justice eventually took the lead, the division between the agencies persisted. Valuable information was often lost or overlooked in the shuffle, and mistakes were made that allowed the Zodiac to remain free. One of the most glaring errors occurred immediately following the murder of Paul Stein in San Francisco. A miscommunication between dispatchers and responding officers led police to believe they were looking for a black male suspect instead of the white male described by witnesses. As a result, officers actually stopped and spoke with the Zodiac just blocks before the crime scene, only to let him go because he didn't fit the erroneous description, or so they believe. This blunder would haunt the investigation for decades, a reminder of just how close they came to catching him that night.
And sometimes he'll be right there from the police. I believe one thing also, the Hillside Stranglers actually were joined in on hunts for themselves.
Yep.
Like, I think about, I want to say like less than 10 years from now, 5 or 10 years, one of the Hillside Stranglers was actually a prospective Los Angeles police officer, and he did ride-alongs part of the hiring process, and he'd actually go on the, we're looking for so-and-so. So he would actually be riding along with the LAPD looking for himself.
If I remember, Hillside Strangler was actually not that far. It was 77 to 78.
Yeah, but it was in Los Angeles, though, not in San Francisco.
Correct. Okay, so In an attempt to bring cohesion to the investigation, a special Zodiac task force was formed in 1971, led by the California Department of Justice. The task force sought to centralize all the evidence collected by local police departments, share leads and tips more efficiently, and pool resources to generate new insights into the case. Around this time, the concept of criminal profiling was gaining traction within law enforcement, thanks in part to the work of FBI's Behavioral Science Unit, which is now called the Behavioral Analysis Unit. The Zodiac case became one of the first major investigations where psychological profiling was employed as a tool to understand the killer's mind. The profile that emerged suggested a highly intelligent, organized offender who was both methodical and meticulous in his planning. He was likely a white male in his late 20s to early 30s at the time of the murders, with a background or interest in codes, cryptography, and possibly law enforcement or the military. The profile suggested that the Zodiac would have had difficulty maintaining stable relationships and would have exhibited antisocial behavior. But while the profile helped narrow down the suspect pool, it did not lead to an arrest. Every promising lead turned into a dead end. Investigators pored over thousands of tips, interviewed dozens of suspects, and pursued new leads with every passing year. But each time they hit a wall, and with every dead end, the trail grew colder. The Zodiac's final confirmed letter was sent to the San Francisco Chronicle in 1974, and after that, he seemed to vanish without a trace. There were no more murders linked to his name, no more ciphers, and no more taunting letters. The silence was deafening. But why did the Zodiac suddenly stop? Did he die, or was he arrested for another crime? Did he move away, or did he simply lose interest? One theory is that the Zodiac may have been arrested for an unrelated crime, forcing him to cease his activities. Alternatively, he may have become incapacitated or died either naturally or at the hands of someone who knew his secret. There's also the possibility that he grew bored with the game and decided to stop on his own terms. Another theory is that the Zodiac never truly stopped at all. He may have continued to kill but changed his methods or moved to a different area where his crimes would not be immediately connected to him. If so, he would have had to abandon the Zodiac persona and his habit of sending letters, suggesting a significant change in the mindset or circumstances. Yet despite the silence, the fear of the Zodiac lingered. Police continued to receive letters from people claiming to be the killer, though most were dismissed as hoaxes. Detectives were haunted by the thought that they might have missed something, that the Zodiac was still out there watching, waiting, and laughing at their frustration.
I personally think he died.
I think he just probably stopped because...
I think he died. Because a man like that, he's not just going to stop. He's not going to get bored of this game. He's going to keep going. It's all about the spotlight. And he was in the prime spotlight. He was on the front page of every newspaper.
If anything...
He made national news.
Well, I mean, if anything, the fact that I'm just going to say it. I'm sorry to the San Francisco, Napa... and other California state agencies, you screwed this one up. But he should, if anything, the amount of attention he was getting and he still wasn't getting caught and the police just weren't getting close enough to him, because he would have known one way or the other they're getting close to him. He would have probably increased that. He would have been like, come on, keep up, let's go. But yeah. Suddenly dropping off, no, I don't. I think he died, and I highly doubt he got caught for another crime. Because if once he's caught, he'd been like, "Oh, you caught me."
Yeah,
he would have admitted to all of this.
Yep. So for years, the Zodiac case seemed destined to remain unsolved, a cold case locked away in the annals of criminal history. But then, in the 2000s, new hope emerged with the advent of modern forensic science and DNA testing. The development of DNA profiling techniques allowed investigators to revisit old evidence with fresh eyes. In 2002, the San Francisco Police Department tested a partial DNA profile obtained from saliva found on the back of the stamps used to send the Zodiac letters. The DNA profile did not match any of the prime suspects, including Arthur Lee Allen. But because the profile was incomplete, it could not definitively rule anyone in or out. Despite this setback, the use of DNA in the Zodiac case paved the way for future breakthroughs. Genetic genealogy, popularized by the capture of the Golden State Killer in 2018, became a new frontier for solving cold cases. Investigators hoped that by uploading the Zodiac's DNA profile to a genetic database, they might be able to identify the killer through distant relatives, much like they did with the Golden State Killer, which that is one we will definitely do.
Yeah, I mean, that was, it's honestly probably a very ingenious way. You just literally work your way backwards into your suspects and just see who fits in that gene pool.
Yeah. We still use it to this day.
Oh, yeah. But, of course, though, this also implies that there will be somebody in that genetic pool that is related to the Zodiac Killer, and that there's enough DNA to actually, you know, do something with it.
Yeah.
He could, for all we know, he could, at the time of the killing, he could have been an orphan and the only little last of his family. And once he died, you know, that's it.
In 2020, cryptographers and amateur sleuths cracked the Zodiac's infamous 340 character cipher. The solution, which read, "I hope you're having lots of fun and trying to catch me. That wasn't me on the TV show, which brings up a point about me. I'm not afraid of the gas chamber because it will send me to paradise all the sooner, because I now have enough slaves to work for me, where everyone else has nothing when they reach paradise, so they're afraid of death. I am not." Though the deciphered message did not reveal the Zodiac's identity, it reinvigorated interest in the case. The fact that a 50-year-old cipher could still be solved gave hope that there were more clues to be uncovered. As of today, the Zodiac case is still open and actively being investigated by multiple agencies, including the FBI and the California Department of Justice. Advances in forensic technology, such as touch DNA analysis, genetic genealogy, and artificial intelligence, have breathed new life into the investigation. Law enforcement hopes that by revisiting old evidence, fingerprints, DNA from stamps, and even digital enhancements of old photographs, they might finally unmask the killer. The rise of online communities and amateur sleuths has also played a significant role. Websites, forums, and social media platforms have become hubs for sharing theories, analyzing evidence, and brainstorming new approaches. While some fear that the abundance of armchair detectives may muddy the waters, others believe that the collective intelligence might hold the key to cracking the case. The Zodiac Killer's trail may have gone cold, but it has never truly frozen over. The case remains one of the most heavily researched and debated in criminal history, with new theories and suspects emerging every year. With modern technology and the tireless efforts of investigators and civilian researchers, there's still a chance that the Zodiac's true identity will be uncovered. And yet, even if we do find out who the Zodiac was, will that truly bring us closure? The mystery of the Zodiac has grown larger than the man himself, becoming a symbol of our fear of the unknown, our fascination with evil, and our relentless pursuit of answers that may never fully satisfy us.
I don't think it will.
No.
I don't either.
Because even if, let's say, we do find out, that dude that did it, he's dead. We can't ask him. We can't get into the mind of him. And probably if the profile fits, he's antisocial. So probably anybody in his life probably would have been just as surprised as we are that he was the Zodiac Killer. So there's really probably not much we can really learn from him other than, yep, this is the dude.
I mean, that's like Dennis Rader.
At least he's alive.
Well, no, I'm saying with nobody knowing who.
Oh, yeah, no, exactly. They just thought.
Dennis Rader, if nobody knows, is the BTK killer.
I know.
And he was head of the
church. He's a deacon, right?
He was a deacon at his church. He was head of the Democratic Party, I believe, or the Republican, one of the two, in his town. Like, he was
involved in town government, that's for
sure. Yeah, he was involved in a lot of stuff. He was a married man. Yeah. He had kids. Like,
he always fascinated, out of the serial killers, he always fascinated me.
Because he was such a chameleon.
Well, it's not even that. Like, find, torture, kill. He literally did the most gruesome stuff, but he could go and be a loving father, because I've actually seen an interview with his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I never suspected.
Dennis Rader is definitely one that is on our list.
Yeah.
So, and we'll be sharing his wonderful pictures.
Honestly,
he took pictures of himself in lingerie. Yeah.
Do I have to see that?
Yes. So, in our next episode, we'll shift our focus to the impact of the Zodiac on his victims and their families. We'll discuss how the trauma of his crimes has echoed through the years, and how the search for justice has shaped the lives of those who were left behind. The Zodiac may have slipped away, but a shadow still looms over those who remember the terror of his reign. Now, when we talk about the Zodiac Killer, it's easy to get lost in the enigma of the man himself, the codes, the letters, the taunts. But behind the mystery lies a tragic and often overlooked truth. The real victims of the Zodiac's terror were the people he murdered and those left behind to grapple with the aftermath. The Zodiac didn't just take lives. He shattered families, destroyed relationships, and left scars that never truly healed. In this segment, we'll focus on the human costs of the Zodiac's actions. We'll tell the stories of the victims, how their loved ones coped or failed to cope with the devastation, and the ripple effect of trauma that has persisted through the decades. This is the side of the Zodiac story that often gets overshadowed by the killer's mystique, but is perhaps the most important part of all. First is Betty Lou Jensen and David Faraday. On December 20th, 1968, two young lives were brutally ended on a dark stretch of road known as Lake Herman Road. Betty Lou Jensen, 16, and David Faraday, 17, were high school sweethearts on their first official date. Their plans for the evening were simple, attending a Christmas concert and then going for a drive. What started as a night filled with promise ended in an unimaginable horror. David and Betty Lou's families were devastated by their loss. Both sets of parents struggled to understand how such a random, senseless act of violence could happen to their children. For years, the Faraday and Jensen families lived under the shadow of the Zodiac. They endured the media spotlights, the constant speculation, and the heart-wrenching realization that the person who took their children's lives may never be brought to justice. Betty Lou's father, Vernon Jensen, would often sit in silence, staring out the window, lost in thoughts of what might have been. He died in 1974, never knowing who killed his daughter. Betty Lou's mother, who had been a vibrant and active member of the community, withdrew from social circles, finding it impossible to face people without being reminded of her loss. The Faradays fared no better. David's mother, who had sewn his Christmas shirt that he wore the night he died, kept it stored away for years, unable to part with it. His siblings, too, were left grappling with emptiness left behind. The family moved away from Vallejo, seeking a new start, but the weight of David's death followed them wherever they went. 7 months later, on July 4th, 1969, the Zodiac struck again, this time at Blue Rock Springs. Darlene Farron, a 22-year-old waitress and mother of one, and her friend, 19-year-old Michael Magu, were sitting in Darlene's car when the Zodiac ambushed them. Darlene was killed instantly, but Michael survived, despite being shot multiple times. Michael Magu's life was forever changed that night. He lived with severe physical pain from his injuries, but it was the psychological torment that truly took its toll. Magu became reclusive, haunted by flashbacks and survivor's guilt. He felt that he should have done more to protect Darlene, even though he was helpless against the Zodiac's ambush. For years, Magu struggled to maintain a semblance of normalcy. His testimony helped police piece together a composite sketch of the killer, but he was never able to identify the Zodiac. Darlene Farron's family, meanwhile, was torn apart by her death. Darlene's husband, Dean Farron, struggled with feelings of anger and helplessness. Rumors began circulating that Darlene may have known the Zodiac, fueling wild speculation and conspiracy theories that only deepened the family's pain. Darlene's parents were thrust into the media spotlights, hounded by reporters and Zodiac enthusiasts alike. Her younger siblings, who adored her, were left with a void that would never be filled. On September 27, 1969, the Zodiac struck at Lake Berryessa, brutally attacking college students Brian Hartnell and Cecilia Shepherd. The couple, who had been relaxing by the lake shore, was bound and stabbed repeatedly. Cecilia succumbed to her injuries 2 days later, while Brian miraculously survived. The attack left Brian Hartnell physically scarred and psychologically traumatized. He had to live with the knowledge that he survived an encounter with one of America's most notorious killers, while his friend and companion Cecilia did not. Brad became a symbol of strength and resilience, but privately he struggled with survivor's guilt and the weight of being one of the few people to have seen the Zodiac up close. Cecilia Shepherd's family was devastated. Her parents, who had always been proud of their daughter's bright future and kind heart, were left broken by the loss. Her younger siblings were shielded from the worst details, but the trauma lingered. They, too, would become targets of unwanted attention, with strangers and amateur sleuths reaching out to ask invasive questions and share their theories about what really happened that day at the lake. The murder of Paul Stein on October 11, 1969 was different from the Zodiac's previous attacks. Paul was not a young couple in a secluded area. He was a 29-year-old cab driver, simply doing his job. The randomness of the attack sent shockwaves through the community. It suggested that no one was safe, not even the bustling neighborhoods of San Francisco. Paul's family was left reeling. His sister Carol spoke openly about the pain of losing her brother in such a violent and public way. The media coverage of Paul's murder and subsequent taunting letters from the Zodiac, which included a piece of Paul's bloodied shirt, only deepened the family's anguish. For years, they sought answers, hoping that justice would be served, but with each passing year, the hope for closure grew fainter. The Zodiac's murders had a profound impact not only on the immediate families, but on the entire Northern California region. Couples avoided lovers' lanes, parents kept their children close, and people changed their routines to avoid being outside at night. The fear of the Zodiac wasn't just about the murders. It was about the uncertainty, the randomness, and the knowledge that he was still out there, somewhere. This fear lingered for years, affecting the psyche of an entire generation. The case became a source of anxiety and obsession, with some people devoting their entire lives to solving it. The victims' families often had to contend with well-meaning but intrusive Zodiac enthusiasts who believed they had the key to cracking the case. This constant intrusion only compounded the trauma, making it difficult for the families to move on or find peace. The Zodiac case also took a heavy toll on the officers and detectives who worked tirelessly to solve it. Some of the best minds in law enforcement devoted years, decades even, of their careers to chasing the Zodiac. For many, it became a personal obsession, a case that defined their careers, not by what they accomplished, but by what they failed to achieve. Dave Toschi, one of the lead investigators for the San Francisco Police Department, became synonymous with the Zodiac case. His unorthodox style and relentless pursuit of the killer inspired both admiration and criticism. Toschi's frustration grew as the years passed without an arrest, and the pressure of the case weighed heavily on him. In 1978, Toschi was accused of forging a Zodiac letter, a scandal that tarnished his reputation and led to his reassignment. He did not, by the way.
I can't imagine a seasoned detective would do something so amateurishly stupid to jeopardize his own case.
He ended up being pulled from the Zodiac case altogether. He was never allowed to look at it again.
Wow, that's a kick.
After working it, he worked it for like 6 years.
That's a kick in the nuts right there.
Yeah.
Other officers, such as Ken Narlow of the Napa County Sheriff's Office and George Bayward of the Vallejo Police Department, dedicated years to the investigation, sacrificing time for their families and health in the process. Many retired with the Zodiac as an unresolved chapter in their careers, haunted by the case and the killer who got away. I would love to be able to interview one of the cops that worked on the Zodiac case.
I don't think any of them are still around anymore, are they?
I don't know. I'd have to look into it because, I mean, they could be. It's not like this is the 40s. No. It's the 70s. I mean, if they're 20 years old at the time, they're...
Yeah.
I love that. It's a little young to give somebody a detective that's like, even back then, but who knows?
Well, yeah, these weren't just detectives. These were regular cops that were working it. And these are small departments. I mean, San Francisco was the biggest department.
And at least in actually, I'm not sure. No, San Francisco and Los Angeles definitely would have been the biggest departments.
Even decades later, the pain and uncertainty remain. The families of the Zodiac's victims have been left to pick up the pieces. Some choosing to advocate for new investigations, others opting to remain silent and protect their privacy. yet for all of them, the case is never far from their minds. Every anniversary, every new theory, and every mention of the Zodiac stirs up old wounds, a reminder that the killer is still out there, or at least his identity is. Law enforcement continues to pursue the case, albeit with dwindling resources and personnel. New investigators take up the mantle, sifting through the same files, hoping that a new piece of technology or a fresh perspective might finally provide the answers that have eluded them for so long. The Zodiac case is more than just an unsolved mystery. It's a story of unresolved grief, of families torn apart, and a community held captive by fear. As we move forward, we'll explore how new technologies are being used to shed light on the case and whether, after all these years, there's still hope for closure. For decades, the Zodiac killer's identity has remained a tantalizing mystery, one that has confounded detectives, amateur sleuths, and criminologists alike. While he may have vanished from the spotlight in the early 1970s, the advances in technology and forensic science have kept hope alive that one day his true identity will be revealed. From the rise of DNA profiling to cutting-edge genetic genealogy and artificial intelligence, modern forensic science has given new life to the Zodiac investigation. Old evidence is being re-examined, and new techniques are being applied in the hope that they might succeed where traditional methods have failed. In this segment, we'll explore how technology has changed the landscape of the Zodiac investigation, and whether it might finally be the key to unlocking one of America's greatest criminal mysteries. In the 1980s, the introduction of DNA profiling revolutionized the way law enforcement approached criminal investigations. For the first time, detectives had a tool that could conclusively link suspects to crimes based on their genetic material. DNA became the gold standard for identifying perpetrators, solving cases that had long gone cold, and exonerating the wrongfully convicted. But for a case as old as the Zodiac's, obtaining a viable DNA sample was no easy feat. Many of the crime scenes had been contaminated, evidence had deteriorated over time, and in some cases, crucial pieces of evidence were lost or improperly stored. Still, investigators turned to the Zodiac's letters, hoping that saliva used to seal the envelopes and stamps would yield a usable DNA profile. In 2002, the San Francisco Police Department tested a partial DNA profile obtained from the back of one of the stamps used on the Zodiac's letters. The results were not what they had hoped for. The DNA did not match any of the prime suspects, including Arthur Lee Allen. While this ruled out Allen and a few other potential suspects, it also deepened the mystery, as it suggested that the killer might be someone who had never been on the law enforcement's radar. Even more frustrating, the DNA sample was incomplete. Because the sample was degraded, it couldn't be uploaded to the Combined DNA Index System, or CODIS, the FBI's national DNA database. Without a complete profile, the possibility of matching the Zodiac's DNA to a known offender was slim, but the potential for DNA to solve the case was far from over. CODIS is what we use now. Basically, if you've ever been arrested or involved in any kind of investigation, your DNA is uploaded to the index system. And
your DNA fingerprints.
Yep. Well, fingerprints are different. That's APHIS.
Oh yeah.
CODIS is DNA only. APHIS is fingerprints. So they basically can put your DNA in, run it through the entire FBI database, and it would pop. Now, here's the thing. If you've never been in trouble, your DNA is not going to be in there. Same thing. If you've never been in trouble, your fingerprints aren't going to be in APHIS. The other thing that is not in APHIS or CODIS are law enforcement DNA and fingerprints. They have their own system that nobody runs unless absolutely necessary.
Same with the military.
The military has their own system. They have that is something completely different. If you are in the military, you are in a system.
Yes.
It is required. That's how NCIS, CID, OSI, that's how they're able to kind of look through stuff. They look through a military database. So that one's completely different, which at the time they never would have thought of doing. I'm sure they've done it now. And obviously nothing popped. Now, your DNA, I will say your DNA, there is no DNA for the military. There's no DNA database. It's only a fingerprint database.
Yeah.
You are, when you join the military, you are fingerprinted. Mm-hmm. And then
I thought there was, and it was only used if it's like, unfortunately, going darker for bodies.
Yeah.
Like if you're in an explosion.
Nope, there is no DNA database for the military. It's only fingerprints. You know how it's easier to take fingerprints than it is to take DNA samples.
Mm-hmm.
So you know how hard it would be to take a DNA sample of every member of the U.S. military.
Oh, God.
That is a lot of people. And then with people coming in and out and constantly moving around and changing branches and all that, then you're trying to keep that, like, the fingerprint databases kept updated. Like when I'm getting ready to reenlist into the Navy. So my fingerprints are going to go from showing Air Force to Navy. Ben's went from showing Air Force to Army.
Both of y'all are traitors.
So
I just looked up a quick thing. Unfortunately, all the detectives that we mentioned earlier have passed on. Detective Tashi, actually, he just passed not too long ago in January 2018. But Ken Narlo and George Bewart had died in about 2010, 2011. So...
Yeah, I'll do some research because there's more people than just them.
Those were like the head ones.
Oh yeah, you know.
I'm gonna kind of crack down and do some research, and if I can find somebody, then I'm gonna reach out to them and see if we can do an interview with them. And
that would be. I would love to do that.
And then I will. We will do kind of our own thing. Do a separate, just a quick little interview.
Although, fun fact, Detective Tashi was actually the inspiration for Dirty Harry.
Yeah. So, fast forward to 2018, when the capture of the Golden State Killer stunned the world. Joseph James DeAngelo, responsible for a string of murders and sexual assaults in the 1970s and 80s, was identified through a groundbreaking new technique called genetic genealogy. Using public DNA databases, investigators were able to build a family tree, tracing the DNA left at the crime scenes to distant relatives and narrowing it down to DeAngelo. So the way that this works is so they don't have a full DNA profile. The Golden State Killer never left full DNA. It was all partial. So they basically take the DNA left, and they put it in. They get partial markers. Okay. So each DNA strand, like a full DNA strand, has a certain amount of markers. So a partial has less markers, obviously, which is why you can't find the full thing. Well, those markers are going to be similar to markers in other full DNA profiles. So, and now with everybody trying to find their ancestry and all of that, DNA, everybody's DNA is in the system at this point.
Yep.
Everybody has done that. And it is legal for law enforcement to, because of this genetic genealogy, they can pull from 23andMe and all of that stuff. They can pull your DNA.
It is in the fine print. So nobody go after them. It is in the fine print.
It says it when you sign up that this can be used this way. So then what they do is they take that partial and then they will link it to family members, cousins, brothers, sisters, mothers, and then they're going to take their profile that they have built and start putting it to each of these people. And they're going to go, okay, well, we have a familial match with this. So we're looking for a white male in his 30s, blah, blah, blah. Well, the only white male in his 30s in this family is James DeAngelo. So this is more than likely the person. And then you get that guy, then you get a DNA swab, compare it, and that partial is going to be a complete match to that full DNA test that you did.
I know they've also used this type of genetic genealogy to also find missing persons. Yes. And I forget the details, but essentially some man's wife, one after like 3 months, she just started having like a severe mental decline, and she unfortunately killed herself. And when he went to file the death insurance and everything like that, it turned out her whole identity was completely 100% fabricated. The social security number was from somebody who like died 20 years before her birthday. Everything about her was made up. And then eventually her daughter, like the child that they had together, did the genealogy thing, and they were able to find that. And then they started like, who is she? And they found her. She was just some woman who got into some trouble in back like 10 years before the husband met her. And they were like, that's her. She just went crazy one day and then dropped off the face of the earth. But then they were able to finally get her like actual name and everything.
Yeah. So the success of the Golden State Killer case set a new precedent for solving cold cases. Suddenly, cases that had seemed unsolvable for decades had new hope, and law enforcement agencies across the country began exploring the potential of genetic genealogy. The Zodiac case was no exception. The partial DNA profile from the Zodiac's letters was re-examined, and while it wasn't enough to generate a full genetic profile, investigators considered using it in tandem with genetic genealogy to identify potential relatives. If a distant relative of the Zodiac had uploaded their DNA to a public database like GEDmatch or FamilyTree DNA or 23andMe, like we talked about.
Ancestry.
Yeah, Ancestry.com. It might be possible to reverse engineer a family tree and identify the Zodiac himself. However, this process is time-consuming, and privacy concerns have made it difficult to obtain cooperation from all relevant parties. Additionally, because the Zodiac's DNA sample is incomplete, any match would need to be corroborated with other evidence, such as handwriting analysis, fingerprints, or circumstantial links. And now, like I said, they do this genealogy, and then typically to confirm, they take the DNA from the killer that they found and match it to that. Yeah. Well, this guy's long dead.
And on top of that, they don't
know who he is.
You're right. They don't even really have a good composite sketch of him. So it's not like you'd be like, do you know him?
They're like with the Golden State Killer, they had a inkling of who it was.
Yeah.
Which makes it 10 times easier to kind of pin it down. This, it's almost impossible. I don't think this will be solved for another 30 years.
I don't think it'll be solved.
Period. I think it will. I think technology is going to advance enough that it'll be able to.
Eventually it'll be resolved, but I don't think it's going to be years.
I hope so. But like you said, even from the get-go, there was very little corroborating evidence that gave us any kind of a hint to who he was. So unless we somehow solve that one unsolvable cipher that says my name is whatever or something, I don't think we're going to, because it's just, we don't have anything else to really kind of like lead us the DNA to there.
Well, and speaking of the ciphers, in recent years, artificial intelligence and digital technology have allowed investigators to revisit old evidence in ways that were previously unimaginable. Crime scene photos, witness statements, and even handwriting samples have been enhanced, analyzed, and cross-referenced using sophisticated algorithms. One example of this reanalysis is the Zodiac's infamous ciphers. While the Zodiac's 408 symbol cipher was cracked shortly after it was sent, his more complex 340 symbol cipher remained unsolved for over 50 years. Many believed it to be a hoax, a jumble of letters meant to confuse and taunt rather than communicate. But in December of 2020, and I remember when this happened, a team of amateur code breakers and cryptographers finally cracked the 340 character cipher using modern computing power and linguistic analysis. The solution, which began with a chilling message, "I hope you were having lots of fun and trying to catch me," confirmed that the Zodiac was still mocking law enforcement even from beyond the grave. The breaking of the 340 cipher reinvigorated the investigation. It showed that with the right tools and perseverance, even the most complex puzzles could be solved. It also highlighted that the potential for AI and machine learning to analyze old evidence and uncover patterns that the human eye might miss. Now, here's the crazy thing. The people that saw this were not CIA. They're not anything. These were simple people that worked for a company.
Oh, really?
That this was a company that they, there are like a, they work with codes and cryptography and stuff, but they literally took a team of their company and put them on the Zodiac cipher. These were not CIA guys and all of that.
Did it say how, I remember this too, but I never read into it. Did it say how long it took them to do it? Like, was it like years? They just got to it in
8 days. Well, no, hold on.
No, it was 8 days. That's fucking amazing.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. I mean, like, somebody give them the other one. They might be able to do it in a couple hours.
Let's see.
There wasn't a lot of evidence.
No, I mean, this is
a... Besides the ciphers.
No.
But your handwriting changes over time.
On top of that, I mean... This is why I feel like the Zodiac did die. Maybe he even killed himself. Something external happened that stopped him from doing it, because I think in this sense he was too clever for his own good, because he created such crimes that were so... Nothing was... Unless he literally told them, these would have just been chalked up as random acts of violence, and they would have probably, unfortunately, just gone into a file cabinet in the various police department's cold cases. If he had not said anything about them, it's just... that's why I feel like even if they were to somehow make a breakthrough with DNA evidence, it's...
What DNA evidence do you really leave, though?
But again, and even then, without, as Kate said, that there's nothing else to kind of corroborate, like, hey, we got this. Does this sound like somebody in your family in the past? You know,
even if he had a family.
Exactly. He could have literally been the last of his family, and he could, and that's, then we really wouldn't find him.
Okay. So it was three guys. David Orenchak from the U.S., Sam Blake from Australia, and Jarl van Eyck from Belgium.
So the Aussies really, you know what? Who better to catch criminals than criminals?
Aussie. Oi, oi, oi. So David Orenchak, one of the key members of the team that cracked it, started working on it back in 2006.
Okay, so it did take them a while.
14 years.
So it did take them a while.
So basically in 2018, he presented his findings at a cryptography conference. Then Blake reached out with ideas about tackling the code, and together they tested countless reading patterns. And then in late 2020, Van Eyck's enhanced software helped them identify meaningful phrases like "try to catch me in gas chamber," leading to the full solution in December 2020. So from the start of their collaboration, it took 2 years.
Okay.
But Orenchak himself spent over 14 years on this. And they used a program. I forget what the they used a tool called AZ Decrypt, which was created by Jarl van Eyck. So it took them 14 years to crack this. 2 years combined. And if I remember right, Sam Blake is a mathematician. So you have David Orenchak, who is a cryptologist. You have Sam Blake, who's a mathematician. And then Jarl van Eyck is a programmer.
Okay.
So
three very smart people.
Smart people that from all different aspects of science.
I'm curious if they're working on the last cipher.
I'm sure they are. If I remember right, they were younger. So it's not like they're old and going to die before they can break the cipher. I'm sure they are still working on the last cipher.
I would hope so.
But the rumor is that this last cipher is hard. Like it may take them another 14 years to solve it.
I mean, like I said, honestly, I think the Zodiac was too clever for his own good. He made it too difficult for
him. Well, this one is supposed to be the most difficult because this is the one that gives away his name.
Honest to God, I really don't think it's going to give us his name.
I think it is. I think he's that big-headed. That's why he made it so hard. Because if we would have had the key, which I guarantee you, if you knew who he was, you could figure out the key. We would have been able to get the cipher.
Maybe. It is entirely possible. And
the thing is, this guy, think about it. Still in 2024, we are trying to decipher his code. So his name, his case will never be closed. It will always be an open cold case. It will. And this is how many years later?
Yeah, I mean,
his name is still going down.
That's why I personally feel he died. He died. I would probably good thing to look. It's still a needle in the haystack. Look at the death records from around that time period, and just kind of start there. Because
that's going to take 10 years.
Oh, I'm sure it would be, but that's probably
the population of California,
and that's assuming, and that's his residence too.
And that's just if, and that's even if he died in Northern California. Yeah, he could have died anywhere in the world.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, but that's honestly the only bet, really.
And who says he died around that time? Who says he didn't live until he died of natural causes?
But then again, but also that goes to the, like, why would he just stop? Someone like
could
this
could have been an ailment.
It could
have gotten Parkinson's. Yeah. Could have gotten dementia.
If he's as young as they say he is, dementia is very rare. Still can happen, but it's rare. Or
he got in a car accident and was permanently or disabled.
Or dead.
Like I said, Parkinson's. Even I mean, obviously we know you can get it young. Look at Michael J. Fox. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
ALS.
Yeah, stuff that. So. Another promising advancement is the development of touch DNA analysis and microbial fingerprinting. Unlike traditional DNA analysis, which requires a significant amount of genetic material, touch DNA can be extracted from minute traces of skin cells left behind when a person touches an object. This technique has already been used to solve several cold cases and could potentially be applied to the Zodiac's letters, weapons, or other pieces of evidence. Microbial fingerprinting, meanwhile, analyzes the unique combination of bacteria present on a person's skin. This technique is still in its early stages, but could one day prove a microbial signature that could be used to identify suspects in the absence of usable DNA. If touch DNA or microbial fingerprinting could extract a genetic or microbial profile from the Zodiac's letters, it might be possible to cross-reference it with existing databases or develop a new lead, finally putting a face to the name. Now, microbial fingerprinting is very interesting. Like I said, it's brand new. It's only been around for a couple of years. And so everybody has unique, obviously, you know, your fingerprints are unique, but also your skin is unique. Everybody has different microbes in their skin based off of their chemical makeup. Well, they're creating a database of all of that. So when you get fingerprinted, they're not just taking your fingerprints, they're taking your microbial fingerprint and they're building a database on that so that they can start using that as well, because it's going to be more accurate. Fingerprints can be removed. I can go burn my fingerprints off right now and be done.
Yep.
But that bacteria is still going to be there. Bacteria never leaves your skin. No matter how much you wash, it's always there, whether healthy or unhealthy.
Yeah, let's not get the germophobes in
on that. As technology has advanced, so too has the ability to re-examine old suspects with new techniques. Handwriting analysis, for instance, has become more precise with the use of digital forensics. High-resolution scans of the Zodiac's letters can now be compared to known samples from suspects using software that measures the spacing, pressure, and angle of each stroke. The same is true for fingerprint analysis. The partial fingerprints lifted from the Zodiac letters and crime scenes, long thought to be of little use, have been reevaluated using modern enhancement tools. Even though no definitive matches have been made, the process has ruled out several suspects and narrowed the pool. Digital forensics has also been applied to the Zodiac's communications. Investigators have analyzed the phrasing, punctuation, and structure of his letters, comparing them to known writing from suspects. Every detail, the way he wrote certain words, his spelling mistakes, and his use of punctuation has been scrutinized in the hopes of finding a unique linguistic fingerprint. The use of cutting-edge technology has brought renewed hope to the Zodiac case, but it also comes with its own set of challenges. Each new technique requires funding, time, and the cooperation of multiple agencies. Privacy concerns and legal barriers have made it difficult to access genetic databases, and some evidence has simply deteriorated beyond use. Moreover, there is ever-present risk that the Zodiac, whoever he was, may have never left behind any viable DNA at all. If the DNA on the Zodiac's letters turns out to belong to someone else, such as a postal worker or the letter's recipient, then the investigation could set back to square one. Despite these obstacles, the drive to solve the case has never been stronger. New investigators armed with the latest technology and a fresh perspective continue to revisit the evidence, convinced that the answer is out there waiting to be uncovered.
That's what happened with the Unabomber. When the man who eventually caught the Unabomber, when he got on there, they had very little leads, but one of the things they had on there was an impression of writing on one of the letters that he sent. But many moons later, when they were investigating, it turned out it was simply the letter was just on the desk of some like U.S. postal mail processing area. Somebody, a postal worker, had simply written something on top of the letter, the envelope, and that's what it was. They just had like a partial word. They thought, this is it. This is will tell us where he is or something. And it was just some dude in a mail processing center was just wrote, like, took a piece of paper on top of this envelope, wrote a note down for something, and the envelope caught a partial. The FBI spent literal years searching down this until finally he came on. They're like, it's an impression. It's nothing. And they were just like, we wasted so much time and effort for nothing.
And that's not to take anything away from.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't
James Fitzgerald, by the way.
That's right.
R. Fitzgerald.
Yeah, and that was
an amazing profiler.
It was, and it's nothing. Not a dig on the FBI. You go with where the evidence pointed you, and the evidence pointed that, and just unfortunately, it was nothing.
James was a profiler and a linguist.
That was
his specialty.
Yes,
he's a forensic linguist. One of the best. He's the one that solved the case. They brought him in at the later part of it. He didn't do the entire investigation.
No, he was already
brought in towards the end. And because they needed help, they were lost, and he went, got it.
Because he took the manifesto and he realized it's not, I think the way he said it was, the structure of how it was written matched the thesis that
Ted Kaczynski
wrote in college. And that's how they were able to figure it out, because initially they brought in like all these professors and they're like, nobody writes like this anymore. This is like 20 years. And then they were like, somebody 20 years ago around this time frame went to school and wrote this thesis.
And that's how they found him.
And there's the guy's Ted Kaczynski's brother was like,
my
brother's at Looney too.
And led him to where Ted Kaczynski was, which was a cabin in Montana. He was hiding in Montana in a fucking cabin in the middle of the woods.
Doesn't some museum have his?
Yes. I believe the cabin, it was out there for a while. I think they moved it because people were going to the cabin.
Yeah.
Trying to stay there. So search for the Zodiac Killer is more than just a quest for justice. It's a testament to human persistence and in the face of overwhelming odds. The case has become a symbol of our desire to make sense of the senseless, to find order in chaos, and to bring closure to the families who have suffered for so long. With each new development, the question remains, will we ever truly know who the Zodiac Killer was? Or will he remain a shadow, just out of reach, his identity forever hidden behind the codes and taunts he left behind? In our next and final episode, we'll explore the ongoing legacy of the Zodiac Killer. We'll discuss how his crimes have influenced popular culture, how the investigation has shaped modern law enforcement, and whether the mystery of the Zodiac can ever truly be laid to rest. Now, the Zodiac Killer's reign of terror may have been brief, just a few short years between 68 and 69, but the impact of his crimes has resonated for decades. He became more than just a killer, he became a symbol. A shadowy figure who taunted not only the people of Northern California, but the entire nation. were looking at, actually, I'm sorry, hold on. Yeah, no, sorry. I was making sure I was on the right thing. Bear with me.
Mm-hmm. So, honey, who do you think? Well, obviously, I think it's pretty clear we don't. The suspects that they had,
probably they're not.
I don't think so. Who do you think, if you had to paint a portrait of the Zodiac just from reading everything, seeing everything? Do you really like? You think that?
Yeah.
I mean,
there's very little evidence connecting him to any of the crime scenes. Who other than a legit psychopath would know, okay, if I do this, this, and this, they're never going to catch me.
It could be.
A genius that was just bored.
It could. See, now this is how I feel, how he looks. I see a guy late to early 30s. Let me follow me on this. I say late 20s, early 30s, clean cut, very unassuming, very much we would probably call him, they would say antisocial. I would go so far as to say socially awkward. Stop pointing at me.
Hey, you're antisocial and you're socially awkward, so.
That's just because I hate people. I'm joking, I don't actually hate people. Anyway, no, but I see somebody also who is very smart, very analytical, but somebody who is not in a job or a position where he is able to utilize his brain power, his innate gifts. He is somebody who is very much, what is that L saying? You couldn't tell him apart from Adam. This is him. He is a very everyday person. You wouldn't know him from anyone else. He is somebody who is probably going to work, and wherever he's at, he could even very well work in law enforcement, but wherever he's at, he is not utilized. He is not being used, in his mind at least, being used to his full potential. Everything about his crimes has said, I'm smarter than you. Try and catch me. This is somebody who has probably been told for most of his life he is stupid or he is not as smart as he thinks he is. This is his moment to probably prove to everybody, I'm smart. And even to the point where he commits a murder, but it is just initially chalked up as random. Well, some couple were out in Lover's Lane. They get gunned down by a psycho hitchhiker who's passing by or something. He waits 7 months and he does it again. But this time, he adds in a letter to the police saying, a call to the police saying, yeah, I'm here to report a murder. Also, I killed those other people back in July. You know, just to kind of like catch everybody up. Yeah, you're actually dealing with somebody who's a lot more dangerous as a random psycho killer. And then he starts taunting them. Eventually, he crescendos because, again, he's having to lead the police. The police are trying to catch up with him, but let's be real, all the police, despite the valiant efforts that they're all putting in to catch him, they're very far behind, so he's having to catch them up, you know, with ciphers and everything. Then he escalates. He's like, okay, what do I got to do to get this going? He just shoots a random taxi person, and then he walks off. They probably almost catch him, but because of an error, he's able to get away. Now, because he just seemingly stopped, that's why I believe he died. Something else, like you said, maybe he got into a car accident or case that he got Parkinson's or some kind of debilitating disease, and then he was unable to commit the crimes, and then he just simply faded and died. I just, this feels like something of somebody finally trying to exercise their intellectual prowess, but they're not, they're still not able. There's like, God, you guys just can't catch me. And they want to keep the thrill of the hunt going, and they have to just keep helping them along.
Okay.
That's so, my opinion.
So I kind of spoke wrong. It's not in our next episode that we're going to talk about the popular culture. We're going to talk about it now. And then our next episode, our final episode, will be going through the suspects list and kind of the final stuff. So, again, the Zodiac Killer's reign of terror may have been brief, just a few short years between 1968 and 1969. But the impact of his crimes has resonated for decades. He became more than just a killer. He became a symbol, a shadowy figure who haunted not only the people in Northern California, but the entire nation. Now we'll examine how the Zodiac has left an indelible mark on American culture, how his case has influenced the criminal justice system, and why, despite so many years of silence, he remains one of the most infamous figures in true crime history. From movies and books to music and internet forms, the Zodiac has become part of the cultural lexicon, a ghost story for the modern era, a puzzle that people are still trying to solve. His name conjures up images of ciphers, cryptic letters, and a faceless man lurking in the dark. In many ways, he's transcended reality, becoming a mythic figure that symbolizes our deepest fears of the unknown. But his legacy isn't just one of fear and fascination. The Zodiac's crimes also forced law enforcement to confront their own limitations, spurring changes in how they approach serial killers, psychological profiling, and interagency cooperation. This case continues to shape investigative techniques and inspire new generations of detectives, journalists, and amateur sleuths alike. The Zodiac's chilling story has captured the imaginations of filmmakers, authors, and artists for decades. Perhaps the most well-known cinematic adaptation is David Fincher's 2007 film Zodiac, starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Robert Downey Jr., and Mark Ruffalo. The film, based on Robert Graysmith's book of the same name, meticulously chronicles the investigation through the eyes of journalists and detectives, highlighting the obsession and frustration that define the hunt for the killer. This is the one I talked about that I saw in theaters. Mm-hmm. We actually just found it on Amazon, I believe.
Amazon or Netflix.
They can watch it there. Zodiac brought the case back to the public consciousness, in introducing a new generation to the enigma of the killer. It was praised for its painstaking attention to detail and its portrayal of the obsessive nature of those who tried to solve the case. Fincher's film wasn't just a retelling of events. It was a meditation on the nature of obsession and the search for truth in a world filled with uncertainty. But Zodiac is far from the only work inspired by the case. Films like Dirty Harry from 1971 feature villains loosely based on the Zodiac, reflecting the public's fear of an unstoppable, unpredictable killer. The character of Scorpio in Dirty Harry shares many traits with the real Zodiac, including his willingness to taunt the police and a sense of invulnerability. Television series like Criminal Minds, Mindhunter, and even American Horror Story have woven the Zodiac into their narratives, often using his character as a representation of evil or the embodiment of an unsolvable mystery. Authors like Thomas Harris, who created the iconic character Hannibal Lecter, have cited the Zodiac as an influence, using the killer's inscrutability and complex motivations as a template for their fictional monsters.
Hannibal Lecter is cited with
yeah.
the Zodiac?
Yeah.
No.
Just think of Hannibal Lecter. Think of how he is.
Yeah.
Hello, Claire.
Okay, no.
The Zodiac has also inspired countless books, graphic novels, and music. Artists like the band Tool have referenced the killer in their lyrics, and numerous documentaries have delved into the case, each with its own theories and perspectives. There's tons.
Hannibal Lecter is just throwing me at this point.
I mean, I think a lot of other people were cited for Hannibal Lecter as well.
But just the Zodiac, like, that just throws me because of who Hannibal Lecter is.
One of my favorite lines. A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti. It's one of my favorite lines of that. It Hannibal Lecter. If you've never seen Hannibal Lecter, go watch it. Anthony Hopkins is...
Silence of the Lambs was a great movie. The sequel, Hannibal, was okay.
The show's actually not bad.
I never actually saw the show.
It's pretty good.
Believe it or not, Anthony Hopkins was not the first person to portray Hannibal Lecter. Brian Cox actually did it in another movie before. I never saw it.
Well, because I've seen Silence of the Lambs. Yes, I know. Surprising. What? I know. Okay. Surprising.
Okay, I just learned something new about my wife of 11 years today.
Hannibal Lecter does not see that. Anthony Hopkins plays Hannibal Lecter. Does not seem like any cited sources of Zodiac. Like besides taunting the police, but he really didn't taunt them. He just called Jodie Foster's character and was like, exactly.
Just think about it. He won an Academy Award for Best Actor in a Leading Role for that movie.
Very well earned. Yeah. Very well. Give Anthony Hopkins all the Oscars.
And the only reason I watched it was out of spite.
Of who?
My biological mother. She told me I wasn't allowed to watch it.
Hello, Clarice.
So I watched it out of spite.
So, in the last two decades, true crime has become a booming genre, and the Zodiac case is one of its crown jewels. With the rise of podcasts, YouTube channels, and online communities dedicated to dissecting unsolved mysteries, the Zodiac has found a new home in the digital age. Websites like ZodiacKiller.com, run by Tom Voigt, have become hubs for discussion, speculation, and theory sharing. Amateur sleuths pore over old police reports, analyze handwriting samples, and debate suspects. Reddit forums and Discord channels buzz with activity as the new theories are proposed and old evidence is re-examined with fresh eyes. The internet has democratized the investigation, allowing anyone with an interest in the case to contribute to the discussion. While this has led to a proliferation of misinformation and wild speculation, it has also brought about new leads and insights. The collective power of thousands of minds working together has produced breakthroughs, such as the recent solving of the 340 character cipher. However, the dark side of this obsession is that it can often intrude in the lives of the victims' families. Many family members have received unsolicited calls, emails, and visits from those claiming to have solved the case. This constant attention can reopen old wounds and make it difficult for families to find closure.
Please, leave the families alone.
And this doesn't just go to Zodiac. This is for anybody out there who thinks they genuinely feel like I have a tip or a lead for a case, any kind of active cold case or whatever, go to the police, tell them, and they will, quote unquote, bother the families. They're the ones that it's their job to do that. And they have
training on how to do it.
Exactly. Not some overeager basement dweller who, you know.
Just listen, the FBI still has a tip line for the Zodiac Killer.
Seriously?
They will keep it open indefinitely.
Okay. Until they catch him.
They are still accepting tips, so call it into the FBI.
Yeah,
but this doesn't even just go for the Zodiac Killer. Yeah. It goes for any family who has, like, murdered family members or anything like that.
Yeah.
Leave the families alone.
Unless you are an investigative expert, i.e. law enforcement, leave them alone.
And even then, you get all better. Call the case detective. All these open cases have a case number and a detective to call.
Yeah, so just, I mean, these people are dealing with a lot.
Yeah. We should solve crimes.
Been there, done that.
Go back to the MP company, then you'll solve crimes.
Yeah.
In what world do the Army MP solve crimes?
Okay, fine. Then go over to the dark side.
You mean the Air Force? No.
No, not the Air Force. What's CID?
Oh.
Go to the dark side. Go to CID.
No, they're not civilian.
I know. Plus, I like my cushy little radio job.
So, beyond the realm of pop culture and true crime communities, the Zodiac case has had a profound impact on law enforcement. The failures and missteps in the Zodiac investigation highlighted the need for better communication and cooperation between agencies. The case was one of the driving forces behind the establishment of task forces dedicated to solving serial killer crimes, which would later become a model for how to handle cases like the Green River Killer, BTK, and even the Golden State Killer. The Zodiac case also spurred the development of psychological profiling. While profiling was still in its infancy during the Zodiac's reign, the FBI's Behavioral Science Unit, again now the BAU, used the case as an opportunity to refine their methods and develop new techniques. The Zodiac's unique blend of sadism, intelligence, and desire for attention made him an ideal subject for study. The insights gained from his case have informed profiles of other serial killers for decades. The use of handwriting analysis, fingerprint comparison, and even the nascent field of forensic linguistics all have their roots in the Zodiac investigation. These techniques have evolved and improved over the years, but the foundational work done in the 1970s laid the groundwork for modern forensic science. Now, before the Zodiac, serial killers were often seen as lone, deranged individuals driven by urges they could not control. The Zodiac changed that perception. He was calculating, methodical, and seemed to kill not out of compulsion, but for the thrill of the hunt and the pleasure of taunting those who tried to catch him. He blurred the line between criminal and mastermind, forcing the public to confront a new kind of killer, one who could plan, execute, and then disappear back into society without a trace. The Zodiac's letters revealed a chilling capacity for manipulation. He controlled the narrative, dictated how he was perceived, and in many ways became his own legend. His ciphers were a challenge not just to law enforcement, but to the public as a whole. He dared people to solve him, and in doing so, turned his crimes into a perverse form of entertainment. This element of the Zodiac character has had a lasting impact on our cultural understanding of serial killers. He was one of the first to use media as a weapon, and his legacy can be seen in killers like BTK, who also sent taunting letters to the police, or even in modern-day cyberstalkers who use the internet to manipulate and control. Listen, BTK is a fucking moron. Do you know how he got caught?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Fucking sent, he sent the fax from the damn church.
No, he sent a floppy disk.
Oh.
He asked the cops, "You can't find my location with a floppy disk, can you?"
And, like, they said, no, of course not. He sends the floppy disk. They trace it back to the church.
I always thought
he downloaded all that information from the church computer.
That's when it was, because I thought he sent some. He would send emails or send something from the church
computer. Yeah, he put it on the floppy disk and then sent the floppy disk in, like they couldn't trace it. Yeah. He was an idiot. So, as we conclude this episode, one question remains. Can the Zodiac ever truly be laid to rest? Even if his identity were to be uncovered tomorrow, would that answer be enough? For many, the Zodiac has come to represent something larger, a symbol of fear, of unsolved mysteries, and of the human desire to conquer the unknown. For the families of his victims, justice and closure are still elusive. Their pain and loss have been overshadowed by the spectacle of the Zodiac's legend, but they deserve to have their loved ones remembered as more than just entries in a case file or characters in a movie. They were real people with hopes, dreams, and futures that were stolen from them. The hunt for the Zodiac may never truly end. He has become a ghost story, a riddle that continues to perplex and entice. Whether he was a lone madman, a genius who outwitted everyone, or just a lucky killer who faded away, his shadow looms large. The Zodiac's killer story is more than just a tale of murder. It's a reflection of our deepest fears and our unrelenting quest for truth. Until the day when his identity is confirmed beyond a shadow of a doubt, the Zodiac will continue to haunt us, not just as a killer, but as the embodiments of the unknown. And with that, we want to thank you for visiting the Scarlet Tavern. Please remember to turn in your glasses, push in your seat, and as always, tip the bard. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.